This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Much has changed through the years in digital signage and digital out-of-home. But one thing that's been pretty constant is how small businesses like the technology when they find out about it, but they don't want to pay for it. Doug Lusted has seen and heard that for many years, having founded a Canadian startup that was doing proximity marketing and venue analytics almost a decade ago. He gradually, with his team, started pulling together the idea and eventually the platform for AdStash, a service that enables small business operators and service providers who target that sector to get digital signage in place and make money from the screens instead of paying monthly bills for them. The core premise of AdStash is small to medium-sized businesses, from one-off to groups of venues, can tap into advertising dollars from a dozen supply-side ad exchanges and generate incremental revenue. They don't pay any recurring subscription fees, and the only upfront cost is an $80 Raspberry Pi media player. Based in suburban Toronto, but virtual in most respects, the company is investor-backed and already has a footprint of some 70,000 screens in the US and Canada. Doug, thank you for joining me. We've known each other a little bit for quite some time now, and I would say your company's been on a bit of a journey because when I first ran into it, I believe you were doing proximity marketing, right?
That's right. Yeah, and we're still doing that. That was our first product. We're heading out to our second.
And what was that? That was called, it was Linket, wasn't it?
Yeah, so to kind of clear it up, because branding is often a question, the company name is Weston Expressions. Our first product is Linket, which was an audience measurement platform, still operates today. And then our second product is AdStash, which, we'll get into.
And the first product, that was, what was that all about? That was NFC-based, right?
It started out to be NFC. We were trying to track engagement and impressions, but ultimately that morphed into Wi-Fi. So it's predominantly a Wi-Fi tracking platform today.
Because every smartphone has Wi-Fi probably turned on or at least available, and not everybody was equipped with NFC and not everybody had it activated, right?
You got it.
So this is just a better way to go. And now you've launched AdStash. Can you tell me and listeners what that's all about?
Yeah. So what AdStash does is provide digital signage networks the technology they need to go programmatic with no monthly fees. And so on a deeper level, what that really means, the core technology we've built is an API that connects your digital signs to multiple programmatic ad exchanges at once. So it saves you all that integration time and money.
And if you become an AdStash customer, what are you getting and what are you using?
Yeah, so it depends on your network. We're pretty flexible. We've got a bunch of different pieces to the puzzle, but basically an API connection that lists you on all the major SSPs or most of them. Now, if you need a media player, we can provide you that. If you need a content management system, we have a free one. Those are typically used kind of by our smaller networks. And the enterprise users generally stick to the API because they've got all of that in place already.
Okay, so if I'm already on Brand X CMS, there's hundreds of them, you don't need to kind of back out of that and use your CMS platform or anything like that. It's the CMS is meant more as kind of something kind of enables it for smaller businesses.
Yeah, exactly. And often sometimes what happens is we'll have a customer who's growing their network and they realize, oh, I can use this CMS that doesn't have any monthly fees. I'm going to switch to that now while I'm deploying. But we can integrate with any CMS. It's a fairly straightforward open API.
I guess you have to be, it becomes a delicate dance of working with other CMS companies because if they're hearing that, you don't need to use a commercial or fee-based one. You can just use ours for free. They may be thinking, well, I don't want to work with you.
Yeah, it's a good point. And to kind of add a little more color to that, it's a very light, basic CMS, right? We can show videos on full screen, maybe a traditional L bracket, but that's it. It's very light based, more kind of aimed towards small, medium sized businesses. Mm-hmm. If you're a large enterprise digital signage networks that need some bells and whistles, you know, sticking to your current partner is probably the best bet. And we're pretty open about that.
Is that intentional, or is that more a function of, if I wanted to have something that was a lot more robust, that there's a whole bunch more time and dollars that I need to put into it to get to that point?
So we found that most of our early adopters were like small, medium-sized businesses that mm-hmm. weren't too picky on what's going on the screen.
Right.
So it would be hard to give out a content management system that's free that has all the bells and whistles, like I said. So I think it was intentional. It's just kind of like a backup plan. One thing we noticed in this industry is that like there's a massive amount of supply in the market that is just in mom and pop shops with the TV turned off. So we're just trying to make it as simple as possible. Like, hey, here's this box. There's no monthly fees. Plug it in and you're ready to go.
And if they opt into this, let's say I have a nail salon in a strip mall, and every strip mall has a nail salon, and they want to do this, how does it work? What do they get out of it? How do they use it? And in terms of what they get out of it, what kind of revenues would they see? Is it something that just is going to just pay for the TV in a lot of respects?
Yeah, sometimes. So basically, if you use our full tech stack, you get the media player, plug it in just to HDMI and power, and then, you know, Wi-Fi or Ethernet, and then a free content management system that's cloud-based. The nail salon often puts up their own content on the screen, you know, hours of operation, promotions, that good stuff, totally mm-hmm. self-serve. And then we, you know, just like almost any programmatic platform, we'll say we aim for like a 30% fill rate with third-party ads that we're getting from our programmatic partners.
Okay.
Given the infancy and kind of where we are with programmatic, some months we hit 30%, some months we don't, depending on a whole bunch of variables, right? But the idea is that I think for a small mom-and-pop nail salon, if you look at our data over the past 24 months, minus the closures due to the pandemic.
Sure.
The average location is making about $50 to $70 a month in revenue that they, you know, wouldn't have gotten elsewise.
And for a lot of businesses, that would be like, you know, who cares? But is that a meaningful number to these people?
It is. And especially with COVID impacting a lot of the revenues of these businesses, they're hungry to figure out any way they can earn a couple extra bucks. Mm-hmm. And most of our clients aren't necessarily one-offs. You know, they own 10 stores, they own 50 stores. And so when you start scaling it, it becomes a nice little incremental piece of business that doesn't require much work.
One of the big challenges that I've seen through the years with these kinds of initiatives is when small to medium businesses are, it's not terribly efficient. You've got to sell to one by one by one by one. You don't just go in and get an enterprise deal for 1,000 locations or anything else. How do you deal with that side of it, and how do you sell it?
Yeah, it's a great point. So in the very early days, you know, our guinea pigs, we were going door to door on these businesses directly. But now I would say 99% of our business is through the digital signage channels. So, you know, digital signage distributors, smaller, medium place based digital networks looking to go programmatic. And if you look at the adoption curve, it's kind of similar to any company. You start with the little guys and you start climbing up the chain. So we've taken that route, and we're working the channel right now.
So using the example of the nail salon again, how would they find you then? Would it be through like a Synnex or Ingram Micro or something like that? Or
yeah,
I can't imagine a nail salon knowing what Synnex is.
Yeah, exactly. So we do inbound marketing, right? So they'll probably find us online. But it's, like I said, it's a small portion of our business, but they'd be able to find us through, you know, any of our paid campaigns, whether it be through Google ads, Facebook ads, LinkedIn ads. Mm-hmm. That word of mouth is probably our biggest channel, right? Like somebody starts making money they didn't before and want to tell their friends, want to move it to the other properties they own. So organic's been a big one for the smaller customers for us.
Yeah. And you provide, if they need it, a $80 media player, right? So I guess if they make 50 to 70 bucks a month, they pay for that thing pretty quickly.
Exactly.
And what is that? Is that like a little Raspberry Pi or?
Yeah, it is. So it's a Raspberry Pi with our firmware on it. It's got a couple extra little components to it, like just some USB antennas and things of that nature. But under the hood, yeah, it's a Raspberry Pi.
The analytics side of the business that you started with, is that bundled with this? And would a small business need it, use it?
It is bundled with it, but it's generally hidden from the small businesses. The reason why we need it is we need to know what traffic is in front of the screen when ads play, so that we know how much to bill these programmatic partners, right? Everything's impression based. So would a nail salon really need, you know, a big data platform to understand their users' behaviors? Probably not. So we hide it. But it is built in there so that, you know, we can gauge traffic levels for our advertisers.
So if I am the nail salon and I opt in, what am I using to update content and kind of manage the thing?
In terms of like our content management system, they're logging in and uploading their own creative. We don't provide, you know, a designer tool or any type of creative ourselves. They just upload whatever they have.
Okay. And they do it off a desktop or can they do it off mobile?
Yeah, they can do it desktop or mobile.
Okay. Specific app or is it just like the web version of the
or we have a specific app as well. So on mobile, we have an AdStash app. You can download and manage your digital signage network just through your phone if you'd like.
I'm curious. I've always been curious about the mindset, particularly of the small to medium business world. The by far the most active blog post on 69 is one that lists all the free software options out there. Do you find that generally for small to medium businesses that, you know, digital signage is not a major core initiative of what they're doing? It's just something that they, you know, maybe they can use, that there's a real resistance there to spending any monthly fees?
I think so. Yeah. We often A/B test this ourselves, is like, what is the bigger value prop, the ability to make money on programmatic ads or save money on subscriptions? And it's really a mix of both. But the smaller players for sure are interested in anything that isn't going to be reoccurring. Mm-hmm. And we also have a lot of requests from like the digital signage groups that they outsource this to. So like I said, like our average user's got about 100 screens.
Okay.
So this is generally something they've outsourced. They've told their digital signage partner, hey, we've heard of this free AdStash thing, check it out.
Okay. And what's your installed base right now for it?
So across North America, we have 70,000 screens. Okay. US is a lot more dominant than Canada. We've seen some pretty exponential growth there. But in Canada, we've got about 6,000 screens and then the rest in the US.
Okay. And what do you figure you have to be at in terms of footprint to get something akin to critical mass? Or does it not really matter as much when it's programmatic?
It doesn't matter as much when it's programmatic. And I think that's one of the huge attractions to it, especially for the medium-sized players, right? If I've got 100 screens, maybe you know, 50 in Toronto, 50 Montreal. That's not really big enough to attract a national campaign. But with by programmatic by nature is grouping everybody together to try and attract a national campaign. So I think that's a really big draw.
Most typically for these small business screen networks, it's hyper-local advertising. It's like the local injury accident lawyers and mortgage brokers and that sort of thing. What kind of advertising are you seeing on these screens?
Yeah, so given that we only do programmatic advertising, most I would say is national. Okay. Now, we do have some local, right? Like the Calgary Stampede brought in a lot of local ads. Even though like DoorDash will do a national campaign, they'll have custom creative or calls to action based on each local community. But for the most part, at least for now, we're seeing a majority of it national large brands.
And with the analytics that you're able to generate, what do you see? Like, what are you learning about sites?
Yeah, so traffic data is the most important for sure. Impressions or visits, right? Unique visits, dwell time, and frequency are the big three per location. It's really interesting to see the dwell times. That's what I'm interested in because, like, during the pandemic, you know, medical was really one of the only things that was open, and you could see like, oh, our dwell time doubled. So the average person sees twice as many ads. What does that mean? How is that going to affect things? So that's the most important right now is traffic. A lot of these exchanges, you know, like Hivestack or Broadsign, they have the geofencing technology so they can gather demographics on their own. Mm-hmm. We have that capability, but most of the time the exchanges say, hey, we got that covered.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75+ content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
With the rise through the years of computer vision for doing on-premise venue analytics, once in a while, something bubbles up and people get all freaked out about the idea that there's a camera looking at me. We've seen that a few times in Canada and it comes up elsewhere. What's the situation with your users when it comes to Wi-Fi? Do they care? Are they alarmed in any way? Like they seem to be on the camera side?
Some of our bigger customers are, but we've been pretty proactive in being GDPR compliant. So from a consumer perspective, they don't see anything, right? They don't see a camera being pointed at them. There's a little box behind the TV that no one sees. So we don't really get any questions on a consumer side. From the actual kind of business side, are we GDPR compliant? Are we collecting any personal identifiable information, which we're not? You know, where are your servers? We get asked those questions a lot, but after they read through kind of what we're doing with the data and they realize it's very anonymous, high-level traffic counting, we've never had any problems with it. Okay. And in fact, it's helped us in a lot of deals. Like we're in airports, and like I said before, we're in medical clinics where you can't put a camera. So we've carved out a nice little segment of the market where we seem to be dominating that market share, at least in Canada, just because of those regulations around those venues.
Is it easier to compete with some of the other kind of focused networks out there? You know, through the years, I've seen bar networks and hair salon networks and nail salon networks and everything else. Because you're broadly based, you're not saying, you know, we're the guys for this. Is it easier to sell into the, you know, a broader diversity of businesses?
Yeah, it is. But it's also a little confusing because any other place-based digital network, in some sense, if they're on programmatic and not going through us, yeah, they're competitors. But on a on another side, they're also prospects. So it gets very confusing of like, okay, who's a competitor and who's a prospect and who should we target? And, you know, there's a lot of quote unquote frenemies in the space. Right. And it's getting even more complicated as more and more programmatic platforms come into play.
When your resellers and channel are meeting with a company that's, let's use your example, has 100 screens across a network, do they even get into what programmatic is and how it works? Or do they just say, put this in, you should, we will sell the ads for you. They'll start showing up within 3-4 weeks. And you should see, you could see a check of $50 to $70. But I'm guessing they don't really want to understand, is this a demand side platform or supply side or any of that stuff? They just, you're just basically saying it's like Google AdSense ads, they'll just show up.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't get into all the nitty gritties. You know, you go into a nail salon and try and explain what a supply side platform and demand side platform are. It's probably not going to work out. So they
it's
just
barely
hey.
Going to work with me.
Yeah, it's getting more and more confusing as more and more are popping up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's basically, hey, we're going to install this new box to your TV. Ads are going to show up hopefully and make some revenue. And another thing is like a lot of our channel partners, they're selling ads directly themselves, not programmatic, but just kind of traditional direct sales.
Okay.
So a lot of the time, you know, it's not just us who's responsible for revenue. We're just kind of adding the icing on the cake.
Okay. So that would be like the guy in your part of the world around Toronto who's got some medical clinics. And he's using your platform, but he would have direct sales as well that he could go to like a medical equipment supplier or whatever and say, do you want to advertise on these?
Exactly. Yeah. So with our agreements with our customers is that we have the exclusive rights over programmatic sales.
Okay.
So we're going to connect you to all of the SSPs that we're partnered with. And, you know, we're going to handle that relationship for you. That's the value we bring. But we're not shutting down your existing line of revenue when it comes to traditional sales.
Right. And that's why you're talking about like a 30% fill rate, that there should be this broad understanding that, hey, guys, this isn't your sole answer if you're an ad network. This is part of your answer.
Exactly. And I think that's where we're at in the programmatic industry is this strange hybrid model. Mm-hmm. You know, we're putting a bet on and focusing that or predicting that more of it will shift to programmatic as adoption increases across the industry. But right now, yeah, this isn't your only source of ad revenue.
So I'm Hivestack and I'm working with you guys. What visibility do I have? Like, what do I see when I'm trying to place an ad of some kind or, you know, drive a campaign across your screens?
Yeah, so we try to be as transparent as possible. What you'll see is an address, obviously, of where the screen is located. Their analytics will tell you the type of audience that's in there. We'll provide you with the traffic counts that are in there. We even require our users, when they install a device, to take a picture of the screen so that you can actually see what the screen looks like and that it exists. And then you'll just obviously see the playback reporting of, you know, how many times did your ad play there and whatnot.
And I'm assuming the analytics side of that is increasingly important, even if it isn't to the venue, it is to the programmatic side.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, anybody who's been in this industry for a while understands that that's one of the biggest bottlenecks of programmatic right now is there's not a clear winner of measurement. There's a whole bunch of different vendors, and we ourselves as the digital signage industry are confused about it, which then makes it almost impossible for these programmatic exchanges to wrap their heads around it or come up with any standards. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. And one of the reasons why is I think that we need to understand that there's going to need to be different methodologies and technologies to measure outdoor screens versus indoor screens, for example. Two very different things. I don't think you can one solution is going to be able to cover both. So we need to really think, okay, how are we going to frame this? How are we going to put standards around it and take the time to educate these ad exchanges on how it's going to work?
Do you get pushback at all from, let's say, some of the larger, more established programmatic platforms saying, yeah, I don't know who you are, you're not big enough for me or anything else? Or do they all kind of look at this as, okay, more inventory and it's properly described and the analytics are available and so on? So sure, it doesn't bother me that it's a nail salon and it's not a major international airport.
No, so in the early days, we got pushback from programmatic exchanges because, you know, we didn't have that many screens. Mm-hmm. And it's that chicken and egg problem. So we went out and started building our supply base. And I would say now, you know, we're one of the bigger players with 70,000 screens. So they look at it and say, not necessarily this is more screens, because that's not always how they think, but they say, hey, this is more audience profiles. This is more traffic for us.
Mm-hmm. And I assume all of your venues are data tagged every which way.
Correct. Yeah. So not only just what type of venue it's in and where it's located, but what size is the screen? What things are around it? There's a lot of data that's associated with it. And thankfully we are not tasked with having to have a UI for that the advertiser has to see. You know, that's basically our programmatic partner's job, and that's okay. Not an easy one.
So go back to the nail salon thing. I sign up for it. I'm running a set of nail salons, which is about as bizarre a thought as I can come up with. Who would do the data tagging for that?
Yeah, we do all of that. So
okay.
Once you install the device, you do take a picture of your screen once it's done. We have a list of venues that you can select from a dropdown that is in accordance with the IAB standards. So, you know, they just find and select nail salon, which is one of them. Mm-hmm. And that's basically it. You know, we do everything from there. Everything is pretty much automated.
Mm-hmm. So it's a free service. The obvious next question coming out of that is, how do you make money?
Yeah, so we take a commission only on the programmatic revenue that we bring to the table that flow through our pipes. Mm-hmm. The commission depends on volume and how many screens you have, but that's how we make our money.
I think I saw the baseline was like 30%.
Yeah, that's baseline, yeah.
And it scales down from there with the larger jobs.
It does scale down, yeah. Sometimes it'll actually scale up depending if you're missing core components of technology. So right. Someone may say like, hey, I don't have this feature in the CMS. You know, can you build it or can I have it? And we'll say, yeah, but if you don't want to pay for the custom dev time, then the way we'll make our money back on that is maybe it's 35%.
Right. Oh, okay. So even in that case, it wouldn't be fee-based, it would be built around the commission?
We're pretty flexible. Most of our customers have come to us because they don't want to pay fees. So it yeah. it ultimately ends up being a commission, whether we like it or not.
Is that just kind of a concession to the realities of working with the small to medium business world? Is they would like to have this, they just don't want to pay for it. So let's work with them as opposed to just saying, well, fine, we won't work with you. Goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's kind of the whole notion of AdStash, and mm-hmm. kind of one of our big hypotheses is building this business was there are so many screens that are not being added to programmatic exchanges because they can't afford the technology that's required to do so.
Right.
So whoever activates all of those screens, is going to own a huge portion of the supply in the market, and nobody's pulled up their sleeves and gone after that segment of the market because nobody wants to pay for anything.
So was AdStash something that going back to like 2013, 2014, you were thinking about, or is it just through the years you kind of came to this realization, having worked with a lot of end users, that there's a hole in the market for this. We can build it and get there before somebody else does.
It was a bit of both. So when we were really focused on analytics back in 2014, we weren't thinking about it, but we heard rumblings of programmatic. And we always thought to ourselves, okay, audience measurement is great, but it's hard to tie return on investment to, especially if you're talking to a digital signage network. Mm-hmm. You know, like, hey, why should I invest in analytics if I can't guarantee I'm going to get more ads? So right. we always thought, okay, well, in the online world, advertisers demand it. And then, so when we heard of programmatic coming down, we're like, wow, okay, our data is actually going to be very valuable here and mandatory. So this is a good space for us to get into. And then we were just really early adopters of it. You know, we started working with Campsite right when they started in Toronto and Montreal, and mm-hmm. it just kind of escalated and we rode the wave from there.
And how many programmatic platforms are you integrated with now?
So right now we're live on 12. Mm-hmm. We've got a few contracts signed that we're just finishing up integrations with, but as of today, we're on 12.
I'm not as close to programmatic as a lot of people seem to think I am. 12 is, well, like half of them out there, or my impression is 12 is like 1% of them.
Sort of. So it's a little complicated. So there's SSPs and DSPs.
Yes.
You know, the DSPs, yeah, there's like 80 of them out there, but not all of them are doing digital out-of-home advertising yet. Only a small fraction of them are. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is we're aggregating all of the SSPs into one link.
The supply side ones.
Yeah, the supply side ones that actually do digital out of home. There's tons of supply side platforms out there. Mm-hmm. You know, you can join with your website, but for digital out of home, there aren't that many out there yet. So I would say of the active ones right now, we have a large majority of them.
Okay. Tell me about the business. You founded it. Is it completely bootstrapped, self-funded, or have you been involved with private equity or VC companies?
Yeah, we're VC backed. So in the 2014-ish, when we were doing just analytics, we raised a small seed round and we went through an accelerator in Silicon Valley called 500 Startups.
Okay, yeah.
And then when we launched AdStash, we raised a second round of funding, a bigger round of funding to help push this product.
Right. And where are you at in terms of size of company?
So right now we're at 13 and growing. It's okay. It's been unique for us during the pandemic. We've gone fully virtual. So and we were hiring during the pandemic too. So it's been interesting to have a team with some members you've never met before. you know, we were surprised to figure out that some of our employees, you know, are like 6'4". We had no idea they were like these big people. It's been a kind of a unique experience. But a majority of our team is software developers. We're not like a heavily focused sales and marketing organization, because that's what our programmatic partners do for us. They're doing all the sales. So of that 13, a majority of them are software developers.
And we were talking before we turned on the recorder that you know, you moved from downtown Toronto out to the burbs. Are you, based on the last year and a half, are you kind of concluding that, hey, we don't really need a physical office or any of those things? Maybe we have like a kind of virtual rent an office and rent a mailbox kind of thing, and it'll do, because so many tech companies have gone that way now?
Yeah, speaking on behalf of our company, I don't think we need an office. We like mm-hmm. to do monthly hangouts where we'll all meet somewhere, you know, just rent an office for a day and yeah. talk strategy and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the day-to-day operations, we don't need an office. Again, software developers, most of the time, you know, are locked away coding, right? They don't really need an office other than
they don't want to talk to other humans anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Ew, who'd want to do that? Yeah, you know, as long as they got a kitchen nearby, things are good. So for us, you know, we'll keep doing the virtual way. That being said, it has presented interesting scenarios in terms of culture, right? It's very hard to build a company culture
yeah,
virtually. You know, there's only so many things you do. So that's why we really like to implement at least monthly hangouts. The whole team comes together in person and does something to try and build that that culture, because that's what's probably important to keeping virtual employees nowadays. Because if they can get a new job without having to move and just simply saying yes, you know, you got to build that company culture to want to entice them to come work for you every day.
Yeah, it would be pretty easy to leave if you have absolutely no emotional attachment to the people you've been working with.
Yeah, exactly.
And don't know how tall they are. okay, this is great. Just last quick question. If people want to know more, where do they find AdStash? I'm guessing it's adstash.com.
Yeah, adstash.com.
Clever.
Yep, best way to get us.
All right, thanks a bunch.
Thanks, I really appreciate you having us on.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.